And this hour, we have something kind of special, and I'll let you know, we're going to be talking about some exciting projects that are at the cutting edge of technology and that help kids to be creative through use of technology. At the Three Rivers Arts Festival this year, there are a lot of activities there that provide this opportunity, and many of them, including some work that SLB has done, has been fueled by support from the SPARK program, which is a program of the Sprout Fund. So we'll talk a little bit about some additional projects with our guests today. And we'll also talk about how your ideas may be able to come to life by working with the Sprout Fund. And we'll do that in just a moment.
Since 1978, the Saturday Light Brigade has featured music, puzzles, audience participation, and conversations for kids, adults, and everybody in between. Honored at the national, state, and local level for excellence in public broadcasting, SLB believes that radio can be a positive force in building our community.
Now 6 minutes after 9 o'clock. And I'm going to turn to Mac Howison first and welcome him back. How are you?
I'm great, Larry. Thanks. How are you today?
I'm good. It's nice to be here. You know, I've been here at the Children's Museum every day for, I think, about 10 straight days. But it's okay. You know, I'm doing what I love to do. And we've been making so many Father's Day cards with kids and a lot of other activities taking place throughout the week, too. It's nice to have some company. So I'm glad
we're all happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're able to be here as part of it. And, I need to say hello to Jennifer Lynn Baker real quickly. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for being here with us. And, Mac, tell me a little bit about what's happening in terms of the Sprout Fund and the SPARK program currently.
Yeah, well, we're excited to announce the most recent round of support. This was probably about a month ago that we made SPARK Awards. And for those listeners that are not familiar, SPARK is a program of the Sprout Fund that's focused on improving the lives of children under the age of 8. So very early in their development, we want to connect very young children with innovative media arts and cutting-edge technology. So we have a couple projects here today that they represent that really well. SPARK, through the Sprout Fund, provides micro SPARK awards of up to $15,000 three times a year. We also provide one round of what's called Super SPARK, which is up to $50,000 for a more partnership-based approach to improving the lives of kids under the age of 8 with arts, media arts and technology. And this is a program that the Sprout Fund administrates. It's due in part to major support from the Grable Foundation, so we're always happy to acknowledge their help and the wonderful work that they're doing in the region to improve the lives of children. So our MicroSpark projects that we have here today, and they can tell you about it in their own words, but we have Dave from Art Energy Design with a program called Curious Creatures. We also have Alexis here from the Girl Scouts of Western Pennsylvania talking about robot algebra, and Ian Ingram talking about walks in the parks with robotic creatures. And so I'm excited about those projects.
You know, I have to say, as somebody who benefited SLB from a SPARK grant, the challenge of trying to think about creative ways to use technology with very young children, our project involved preschoolers, was really exciting to us. And it was fun to think about that a little differently. It might seem, you know, to you like technology is ubiquitous and kids are always going to be exposed to it. But trying to think of new ways to use robust technical concepts in very rich ways that will help kids, it is really tricky to try to figure out. And I'm really glad to have all of you here. I'm going to start with David. David Edwards is from a group called Art Energy Design and Curious Creatures is your exhibit. Tell me a little bit about yourself first. Are you from Pittsburgh originally?
Yes, I grew up in Pittsburgh and have lived here all my life.
Where did you grow up?
In a little place called Swiss Helm Park. It's kind of tucked between Swissvale and Squirrel Hill. A lot of people don't really know that area, but it's a wonderful place.
Know the area well, right sort of adjacent to Edgewood.
Exactly.
In that area. And art energy design is what?
Art energy design is a ever-growing, basically kind of encompasses technological curiosities for learning. Basically, in this context, Curious Creatures is an example of hands-on learning, hands-on play. And what we're doing is actually going back to the basics of mechanical motion. And so we've created our small toys, small devices that could be seen as learning sculptures. And each one contains a basic mechanical function, like the cam, the screw, the pulley. And they show ideas like the center of gravity. And kids are allowed hands-on play. They can play with each little sculpture and toy and discover what this mechanical motion is. And like you'd said before, the age group, though, between an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, the learning capabilities are vastly different. So while the young child loves to just play, the older child asks a lot more questions. How does this work? And so we can engage in predictive play, questions and outcomes with what might happen while they're playing with these devices. And it's been a lot of fun.
Tell me, and by the way, Alexis and Ian and Mac, feel free to jump in if you want to. I don't know how well you know each other's projects yet, so you might have questions too. So you've got basically the simple machines, it sounds like.
Yeah.
There's 7 of them. Well, it depends on whose book you're looking at, but are there 7 simple machines? We've got the inclined plane.
We have actually probably 50 different ones,
wow.
but little gadgets in there, but each one does engage in about, you're right, 7 basic ideas of mechanical motion. That's indeed correct.
Now, what gave you the idea to do this? Do you have a background in mechanics, or I'm curious how you conceived this?
Well, I'm a sculptor, and I was always a great fan of Alexander Calder, the great sculptor who created the mobiles. And a lot of folks might know that he created a thing called Calder's Circus, which was wildly popular, and where he just took bent wire little creatures made out of very simple things, corks, wire, bits of clothing, and created an entire performance. And this is a grown man who was wildly famous at the time, that was on his hands and knees making wonderful little creatures and entertained children and adults alike. And I've basically taken the Curious Creatures, taken a cue from Alexander Calder and basically modernized it. What's fun is some of the creatures, a lot of the creatures that I use are using repurposed or recycled materials in the creation. So there is a bit of a recycling angle to the play too.
Now, where can kids and families see your work, or are you testing it in a specific environment?
Well, yes and yes. we're actually at the Three Rivers Arts Festival right now, and I'll be there right at the Point. You can go down to the Point and look for a large flower sculpture, and I'll be there from 1 o'clock till 2 with a few of the Curious Creatures showing those off. I'll also be here at the Children's Museum on June 27th from 12 to 4 p.m. and with the Curious Creature crew and the large power flower sculpture, which is another thing. But in support of the Children's Museum's Curious George, Get Curious exhibit, which opens June 19th.
I was kind of wondering when I saw the word curious, if that might be the case. Tell me about the power flower, since that seems to be very popular and people can see it at the Arts Festival. Can you explain what is going on there? And if I'm a kid and I approach it, what am I going to do and see?
Well, the Power Flower and Curious Creatures are separate programs, but the Power Flower, basically we've made a miniature version of the Power Flower, which is a solar-powered, kinetic, wind-generating energy device. and it can recharge some of the mechanical battery-operated creatures that I described. And what the power flower does is it supports, it's basically the home where these creatures live. Many of these creatures are insects. Some are little mammals like mice, and even a big rat. And the power flowers can be seen as their home base that they can hang from, recharge from, and perform tricks from. So that's the linkage between the power flower and the creatures.
So does the flower spin?
Yeah, well, the power flower actually, it spins in the wind and has a little mini turbine that actually generates electricity. And there's solar panels on the leaves, which generate electricity from solar power. It stores the power from wind and sun energy and deep cell batteries that are in the base, and the power flower can light itself, and it serves as a platform, like I said, to recharge some of the batteries that are actually in the embedded in some of the creatures. So it's a art that actually provides energy and self sustains its own energy needs.
Interesting. Somebody has a question for you. I haven't given the phone number, but I'm delighted to take a question. You're going to need to hear the question. If you have a question, I hope you'll consider calling, whether it is a question about the particular program we're talking about or a general question about technology and kids. John is listening up in Mercer County. Hi, John. You're talking with David Edwards. Dave Edwards with the Curious Creatures and the Power Flower Project.
Well, he mentioned Calder, and I was wondering if anyone knew what happened to the Calder mobile that was in the old Pittsburgh airport.
The Calder sculpture, the last time I checked, is now been moved to the new Pittsburgh airport, and it's the mobile is called, I believe it's just called Pittsburgh, and it has been moved to the new Pittsburgh airport. I just saw it 2 weeks ago.
Okay,
it's doing fine.
For a long time, it wasn't there.
Yeah, yes, it's there now. So all is well.
Great.
That's a good question. I always loved that mobile, and I don't fly that much to see it anymore. So I'm glad it found its home there again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John. And kids love mobiles. I can remember, having them in my room. I still, wind chimes are a form of that. And the thing about the power flower that's cool is in some ways you're emulating a flower, right? It takes in energy from the sun, and it grows as a result of that energy. In this case, you're storing it, and the insects are able to derive energy from the flower.
Yes, that's exactly the principle. What was fun was one time I was in Mellon Park, and I overheard a young girl say, "If the world worked like a flower, everything would be great." And I wasn't exactly sure what context she meant that in, but that stuck with me. And I thought, boy, that a flower would be a great platform for solar energy. And if I could just get the petals to spin, maybe we could get some wind power out of it. So
yeah.
I thank that girl, wherever you are.
Shifting away for a minute, did you know you wanted to be an artist when you were a little boy, when you were growing up?
No, my parents wanted me to be an attorney.
So tell me just a little bit about your life. How did you eventually find art?
Well,
how did it find you?
Like many stories where you have that teacher, that special teacher in high school that tells you this is where your talent really is, and sometimes you listen to them and sometimes you don't. And I had an art teacher that said you really should follow an art career, and I didn't. And later on I realized that Vince Joyce was his name, and he was right. So I later in life, after working for myself and had my own business, I decided I would concentrate on art and moved into that only about 12, it's been about 13 years ago now.
Well, it's a good thing to do. And people, I see kids all the time, especially middle school and high school kids, wondering about career path. And, my standard advice is everything is reversible and changeable. You don't need to necessarily have it all figured out. It took me a while to figure that out, so I like to tell people that. Sometimes their parents don't like that I'm telling them that, but
I think it's good advice. I think you're giving great advice.
Generally speaking, it's good every now and then. Generally, parents appreciate it too. nodding her head when I said that was Alexis Howard, who's sitting next to David. And how are you, Alexis?
I'm great. Great today.
I'm sure you see a lot of girls wondering about the same questions. She is with Girl Scouts of Western Pennsylvania. Robot algebra.
What is that?
What is it? Tell us about it.
Robot algebra, it's a phenomenal program. And if you've ever heard of Lego robotics, it's very similar to that. It blends, you know, technology with dancing and music and then, of course, pre-algebra. So this is a program that, you know, we're partnering with CMU. We're partnering with Eli Silk and Robin Shoup to expose young ladies to algebra concepts through working with robots.
And I'm just wondering about the execution of this. Are they learning algebra as they're building robots, or how exactly does an algebraic principle come out of robots?
That's a great question. We just went to training ourselves a couple weeks ago for this particular program, you know, down at the Robotics Institute, and the students will be able to build the robots from Legos, but then they use the Lego Mindstorm software to actually program the robots to do different concepts, such as following a black line, such as going around in a circle, going through a maze. There's a lot of different concepts, and with the robot algebra, with the synchronized dancing, there's about four different robots, all different sizes and shapes, and they have to learn how to use algebra concepts to program these robots to dance to music.
I see. So if a robot is going to move on an XY plane, maybe take three steps forward and two steps over and three forward and two over, that can be expressed as an equation that goes into the programming instructions. So if there's an end result that you want the robot to accomplish, you need to express it as an equation in the variables, or you need to solve the equation in the variables to make the robot move.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
So it deals with, you know, they
To me, it's cool. I mean, what's that, Mac?
We think so, too.
It's a phenomenal program. So it teaches them to understand the circumference and radius. And, you know, it teaches them to also deal with going from millimeters to centimeters in a really fun, hands-on, interactive way.
Really? Yeah. I mean, you could, cube numbers, too, at least I think. I don't know if you're, you know, 1 cubed is 1, 2 cubed is 8, 3 cubed is 27. And I could see the robot, going forth in ever greater steps, or you could explain logarithms that way too.
Exactly. We deal with a lot of rotations. They have to know how many rotations that wheel is going to take to do X amount of centimeters or X amount of millimeters. It's just a great program for these young ladies to work with, and the beauty of it is that we're going to work with middle school girls and high school girls as well, who are going to mentor that younger age, under 8, to expose them to these concepts early on so that they're not intimidated when they get to that level and they really start learning, you know, that the math.
What a cool idea. I'm thinking of all sorts of ideas, such as witnessing the motion of a robot and not knowing the equation behind it and speculating what equation is driving the robot's performance. And I don't know if that's part of the program or not.
I think you hit it on the mark. You definitely did. When we were at training, we were tempted to say, okay, well, we're just going to guess the distance, but we couldn't do that. We had to measure the circumference of the wheel, and we had to see the radius and calculate what the distance was. And what I found out from this training, actually using those concepts, we were able to get a more accurate movement of that actual robot. So one of our things, we really want to engage the girls' interest while sparking their excitement in, you know, the science, the technology, engineering, and math, of course.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with project managers that are doing projects under the SPARK program of the Sprout Fund. And these are all projects that involve kids and technology. Ricky just sent me a note saying, it's a shame you're not a middle school girl. It sounds like you would love to do this. So maybe I'll get to do it. I mean, I think boys could do it, too. But Tell me a little bit more about yourself, Alexis. Are you from Pittsburgh?
I am from Pittsburgh. I grew up in East Liberty and actually went to Perry High School.
Uh-huh.
So working with the students in the schools, you know, we do a variety of other programs as well. And working with the students in the school, it touches home, you know, to expose them to a lot of different things. Myself, I have a background in biology, and I was exposed to that in high school, which caused me to carry on and get my degree in biology. So we definitely want to spark this interest in these young ladies to say, you can do math too.
I know, and we've talked about this before on the radio, that typically around the age of 11 to 14, a lot of girls who love science start to move away from it, either due to peer pressure or societal influences. So it's important that you're working with that age group, I think, to try to keep that magic alive and to provide some mentoring to these girls. Now, for Girl Scouts, this seems a little different because these girls aren't necessarily uniformed Girl Scouts, right?
Correct. We have so many different pathways that girls can participate in. And a lot of people think just traditional troop. But girls can participate in our series programs, which is going to be what this robot algebra is, as well as, you know, if they just wanted to go to camp, they can do that as well. So there's a variety of ways that girls can participate in Girl Scouting if they do not want to belong to that traditional troop.
How big are the robots?
They are... Oh, it's hard to explain. They're not that big.
Are they like a Roomba, you know, a little carpet?
They're like the size of that Mountain Dew bottle.
Yes, I have a Mountain Dew bottle. I arrived very thirsty this morning, and this is all I had available to me. So they're not that big. This is a 20-ounce bottle of Mountain Dew, so, you know, 2X and 3Y, it just moves across.
And it really depends because the robots are so many different shapes. So there's, of course, building instructions on how you build these particular robots. And the beauty of having them be so many different shapes is it makes the girls really think, you know, this robot, because it's a lot wider, you know, I have to really do the math calculations for that to see how can I get both robots to move at the same time, at the same distance.
It really fills me with wonder about what you could do defining a circle or other things. Did you conceive this?
Oh, no. This is a program through CMU, the Robot Institute. So we are partnering with them. They're providing training for the Girl Scout staff, and they're actually going to come out and deliver some workshops for us as well. So this is a huge project. There are a lot of different organizations that are working with this project as well. The difference with our project is that we're not tapping just that middle school group of girls. We are teaching these middle school young ladies how to do these concepts and also teaching them how to mentor the younger girls and teach them these concepts as well.
I was going to ask about the impact on girls 8 or under. So once these middle school kids understand things, they'll be able to reach to people younger than them and try to keep that spark alive. And hopefully the younger girls will note that there are girls in that precarious age group that are still into things scientific and will, you know, hold on to science as they get older.
Obviously, with the Girl Scout Research Institute, what we found out is that girls start to drop off around fourth grade. That's when, and they're still performing at the same rate as young boys, but they start to have that intimidation and feel as though they're not good enough to do those STEM fields, the science, technology, engineering, and math. So this is a great project to still keep their interest alive so that they can continue that on when they actually hit middle school.
What a great idea. Does anybody want to add anything? We're going to talk with Ian Ingram after a short station break, but we have a couple minutes for Mac, David, or Ian to add anything about this project.
Well, even just about this, about the Girl Scout project and robot algebra, one of the things that I think, and actually you'll find as an undercurrent, the listeners will find as an undercurrent of a lot of the projects we support through Spark, there's an aspect of play to all of these projects. And that's really an easy way and a logical way to connect with children that are under age 8 and even complicated concepts such as developing your algebraic skills. The entree to that with this Girl Scouts program is through play. And David talked a lot about how much those kids like to play. And I know that Ian's is also about getting outside and harnessing children's play. So that's been a big theme of Spark this year and is an undercurrent of a lot of the other programs that we've supported through Spark.
Right.
That was a please.
I was going to say, we're looking to launch with a lot of schools this coming fall. So if people are really interested in having this at their particular school, they can definitely go to our website, www.gswpa.org, or they can even give me a call and contact me at 412-594-2529 if they see that there's an interest in their child's school to have this programming.
Terrific. And if you're a teacher or if you work with very young children in preschool, whether you could be a teacher as well in that environment, but if you work with kids, this could be maybe an after-school program. Here's a great opportunity. So you can go to gswpa.org to learn more about robot algebra. And I'm still thinking about robot algebra. I may be thinking about it. Robot calculus. Can't be too far behind. And then we can get into robot
differential equations.
Exactly. Right. I was going to say, if I had had robot numeric methods, I would have been, you know, those arrays and multiple dimensions. Ian knows what I'm talking about, right? You know, not that I don't think you guys do, but.
I don't.
Robot partial differential equations. It's endless.
All of math should be taught with robots.
Absolutely. It literally is endless if it's partial differential equations. We're going to talk with Ian in just a moment. It's a pleasure to have everybody here from the SPARC program of the Sprout Fund, broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh, along with Dave Edwards, Ian Ingram, Alexis Howard, Mac Howison, and Ricky Berger. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings on public radio. 60% chance of rain today, 70% tonight, 50% tomorrow. But, you know, it was supposed to be this rainy all weekend last weekend, and it wasn't so bad. High today and tomorrow, 84 degrees. Sunset tonight, 8:51. Low, 68 degrees. And sunny everywhere right now. 74 in Clarion, 75 in Indiana and Washington, 73 in Grove City, and 75 degrees in New Concord, Ohio, as well as at our studios in historic Allegheny Square.
He got a cool little chick named Rockin' Millie. He can rock and roll and Susie Q and do that crazy hand jive too. Papa told Willie, you ruined my home. You and that hand jive got to go. Willie said, Papa, don't put me down. And they doing that hand jive all over town. They doing that hand jive.
Yeah. Hand jive.
All over town.
Hand jive.
Come on with me.
Doing that crazy hand jive.
Mama, mama, look at Uncle Joe.
Do, 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 do.
He doing the hand jive with Sims Don't Flow.
Do, 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 do.
Grandma gave baby sister died.
Do,
do that hand jive one more time.
Do, 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 do.
Dr. Lion and the Unchained.
Do, 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 do.
Now they all think that crazy beat. Where I'd really give them all a treat.
Do, 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 do.
When he did the hand jive with his feet.
Do, do, do. Hand jive.
The hand jive.
Oh,
yeah.
Hand jive.
Come on, Willie.
Hand jive.
Swinging, baby.
Doing that crazy hand jive.
Hey, hey, hey.
Do, do, do.
All right, do it, Willie.
Do what?
Put your hands in the air like you don't care.
Like this?
Once on
picture.
Saturday Light Brigade is made possible in part with support from Spatial Audio Solutions, providing configurable audio playback and streaming software solutions to radio stations, webcasters, and businesses around the world since 1998. Additional information is available at spatialaudio.com. That's spacialaudio.com.
Taj Mahal and Linda Tillery. Just did a song you probably recognized, Willie and the Hand Jive, brand new from Putumayo Kids Presents Rock and Roll Playground. We're talking about kids and technology and projects currently underway at the cutting edge of trying to combine both the right and left side of our brains as we teach kids to embrace technology. And we're going to talk in a minute with somebody I really admire. We kind of lurk around each other's spaces here at the museum when things happen. Ian Ingram will join us in a moment. If you're a fan of radio or country music or Pittsburgh's heritage, you may have heard that Slim Bryant passed away at the age of 101 late last month. Born in Atlanta, Slim came to Pittsburgh in 1940 and together with his band, the Wildcats, soon became a popular performer on stage and the KDKA Radio Farm Report, a local treasure. Mr. Bryant also had a national following and a hit record, Mother, the Queen of My Heart, recorded by Jimmy Rogers, covered by the likes of Arlo Guthrie, George Jones, Merle Haggard, and many others. He was the last surviving musician to have recorded with the legendary country singer Jimmy Rogers, who died in 1933. As a special tribute, we've posted our January 2009 interview with Slam at the age of 100 at neighborhoodvoices.org. We hope you'll stop by and enjoy his spirited reflections. He has a lot of memories that he packed into a 10-minute phone interview. It's at neighborhoodvoices.org. And you're welcome to call us at 412-586-6300 or 1-888-752-7234 if you have questions for anybody here on the panel talking about activities. And we'll let you know in a few moments how you can get involved with the Sprout Fund and the Spark program. Maybe you'd like to apply for a grant. Maybe you would like to attend an ideation session where you can think about ideas and pick up ideas from other folks. There's so many things that the Sprout Fund has to offer if you are looking for ways to encourage your own creativity, especially in this program along the lines of kids and technology. Ian Ingram joins us now. Hello.
Hello.
I've given you such a big build-up. I don't mean to give you such a big build-up, but Ian does some really cool stuff. If you were at the museum and saw the fishing pole with the squirrel tails on it, the rod and reel with the squirrel tails that would respond to your motion, that was Ian's work. He's done some other interesting robotic applications. And you've got a project now underway, which is called Walks in the Parks with Robots. And do tell.
Well, It's actually called Walks in the Parks with Robotic Creatures, just because I found people have a pretty distinct idea of what a robot is.
Yeah, and, you would think you were like walking with Rosie from the Jetsons.
I think that's what people do think.
Okay.
And that she's sort of a nature guide or something like
that.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Robotic creatures. Now, they're not the creatures that Dave Edwards told us about, the curious creatures.
These are different creatures, but obviously there's overlap between the different ideas at this table. These are machines that demonstrate different animal behaviors and concepts from nature. So
you like this stuff. I mean, making the squirrel tails.
Well, the squirrel tail thing is one of them, actually.
Yeah.
So the idea essentially is that we go into the parks, specifically Schenley and Frick, and it's a group of me and parents and 3 to 6 year old children, and we go on a nature walk, but at the same time we have this creature with us that is related to something that's going on in the natural world. And so it's sort of one part nature walk and one part sort of technology workshop oriented at the 3 to 6 year old level. You look as if you have a question.
No. I'm just taking it all in. This is really interesting.
So,
please. My mouth was hanging open. That's why Ian. It's really curious. Go ahead.
So usually we begin by doing something where we talk about something in particular. For instance, I have a machine that uses the territorial drumming signal of the pileated woodpecker and other woodpecker species. And so initially we just talk about birds. And I have a bunch of different bird heads. And we look at the bird heads in different pictures and then get an idea of which picture is which based on they're actually sort of facsimiles of skulls. With the beaks intact. And so we can talk a little bit about beak specialization for different food types, you know, which kids get. They understand that, you know, a mallard's beak is for eating certain kinds of things, and a hawk's beak is for, you know, eating other birds, which some kids really get into. You know, you have to appeal to that vicious kid because you're trying to get everybody in. But and that there are herons that stab fish, and that there are
storks that bring babies.
Storks. Well, that's not what their beak is really designed for. That's sort of a repurposing of their equipment. But but at that point, we sort of segue into woodpeckers in particular and talk about their beaks. And kids sort of understand that it's for excavating the trees to find food. But one thing they don't know about, which actually a lot of people don't know about, is that it's also the primary way in which woodpeckers signal one another. So they do a drumming signal, which is what you usually hear and what woodpeckers are usually doing on a stovepipe. And that's either to declare territory or to attract a mate or to actually help find a nesting site. At that point, we talk about why the woodpeckers do that, and that it's kind of like the singing of other birds. And then we talk about how woodpeckers would go out and look for the best tree, which would be the most reverberant one. And then I bring out this robot. And the robot itself is a machine that has multiple heads, and it's kind of like a typewriter slash woodpecker slash robot.
It can be what you want it to be?
Well, it has two heads, and it's soon to have three heads. And each of these heads is a different species of woodpecker.
Oh, cool. So it's like an IBM Selectric that you can put on different – and nobody remembers that. But you can have different functions, so it can be three.
Yeah.
What can it be now?
Well, so what you do is you take it to a particular tree, and you attach it to the tree with some straps. And then once you turn it on – it can bring up a particular head, like a typewriter, sort of, except that it keeps the head up.
Oh, so it's self-adjusting? It figures out what based on what it is in proximity to, it figures out what it should be?
No, it's essentially just runs through a bunch of different heads.
Oh, okay, so, okay.
And
I
actually,
get it.
So
it behaves differently. If you put it in a place, it will cycle through what it can be and let you
sort of
see
randomly.
The behavior.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then because you can see which head it is, the kids can see which woodpecker it is. But before we even attach it to a tree, we usually go around with a bunch of woodpecker heads and knock on trees to find out which ones are reverberant, because that's what the kids love to do. You know?
Oh, interesting.
And then knock on trash cans and all these other things, and so you kind of get a sense for what the woodpeckers themselves are looking for. And then in looking at the machine, we can all the parts are exposed, so the kids can see the batteries and the motors and the mechanisms and all the different things, and then they can point at them, ask questions about them, and I can explain how they're what they do.
Well, I was just going to ask you to help explain what the intended outcomes of this are. I mean, for one, it's not necessarily in this order, but it's creating a love of nature and interest in nature. But also, in some ways, you're kind of tricking folks to consider technology by kind of softening the mind up in an outdoor kind of open space. And then before you know it, you're looking at gears and motors and probably belts and all sorts of other things, as well as simple principles of like simple harmonic motion and other things that not necessarily that you're going to use those terms with 3 to 6 year olds, but is that pretty much your objective?
Well, the objective is manifold, but you're kind of right in that the idea is to get kids into nature and to get them to observe things. Like when we do the robot about camouflage, we spend a lot of time looking at different kinds of materials and then asking other sorts of questions. But at the same time, also making it about technology. And it's to some people it seems like a little bit of a perverse bringing together of things. But and it's been effective in getting kids that are already into nature to begin to think a little bit more about technological things and engineering and so on, and getting kids that are into robots to actually come out into the woods and play. So it in amalgamating those two things, I think it can talk to a lot of different sorts of kids' interests.
Well, many other great mathematicians and scientists would always, I think, relate natural phenomenon with scientific principles. So you're following in the footsteps of a lot of others, although perhaps adding technology to that equation as well. And a lot of people are concerned that young children and frankly adults aren't spending as much time outdoors anymore. So it's kind of a neat thing to combine those. And folks may be curious about your background. I know you're at Carnegie Mellon. Are you in the Robotics Institute there?
Not anymore. I was working there before.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
Where are you now?
Well, I'm sort of all over the place.
Independently creating some of these things?
Yeah. We have a small little studio set up north Oakland. So
that's great. Yeah. Where are you from originally?
Well, my dad was in the Army, so I'm not really from anywhere.
From everywhere. I understand.
But you know, I've lived in Pittsburgh longer than anywhere else now, so I've been making the claim to be a sort of transplant Pittsburgher.
Well, I'm glad you've stayed here. Was it Carnegie Mellon that initially brought you to Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how did this love of nature, and I want to ask Dave this same question too, how did this interest in nature come about in combining these things? Because Dave's project has a combination of nature and technology as well.
Well, I think, as you said before, the two are not antithetical. You know, nature is an inspiration for much of what scientists and technologists do. Even now, actually, in engineering practice, biomimesis, deliberately mimicking something that a biological organism is doing, is becoming a really big thing. And it always kind of was. I mean, Velcro is biomimesis, and other things are too.
Yeah, I was at a seminar yesterday in which we talked a lot about microphones. And, we were talking about first principles. And we started to talk about the eardrum and its reverberations and the similarities between the way certain types of microphones work. And a light bulb kind of went off in my head that early designers of microphones were probably trying very hard to mimic the way an ear moves, and the same with loudspeakers as well. So many of the things we've developed, I think, are based upon what we observe in nature. David, how about for you? David, we talked with him very early on, which is one reason I wanted to make sure, in case you just tuned in, David Edwards has an exhibit or a program called Curious Creatures. The idea of using animals, insects, flowers to demonstrate these principles, was that kind of a natural for you?
Well, I would really agree with what Ian was saying. Nature has pretty much invented everything, and we, in essence, are always seemingly trying to mimic or improve and, you know, to sometimes successfully, and I doubt we ever improve. But and children just, on the other side, children just love bugs. They love animals. They see them, they relate to them, and it's a great way to deliver a, whether it be a scientific concept, a concept, a simple basic concept of mechanical motion, it's a great way to deliver in a non-threatening manner an idea that will stick with them. And that's always been an inspiration to me to use nature in that respect.
And, you know, as I think about it, our story box project with the pre-K kids, we used animals as a basis for that because we wanted to explain to kids how microphones and digital recording and editing and studios work. And we thought animals was simply a very relatable topic, a non-threatening topic, and also one where kids have individual feelings, individual feelings about different animals. So it worked really well.
And knowing I was going to be on the radio, I brought a visual aid, knowing you'd be on the radio.
I'm glad you did. Oh, look at this. It's a mouse,
It's a little mouse made out of a recycled ice cream scoop with little lamp finials as the eyes and bent wire.
This is beautiful.
And what's kind of fun is that little tail can hook onto a spiraled shape friend that he has called Snakey, and he tends to spin down the snake, the helical spiral of the snake. So that is big with a 3-year-old crowd. They will do that for half an hour at a time.
Yeah, picture just the top part of an ice cream scoop, and in this case, it's really shiny stainless steel, I think, or maybe chrome plated, and take just that top part. Turn it upside down, and you get this convex surface, which is the body of the mouse. And then what Dave has done is screwed in some eyes and drilled holes to have, like 8-gauge maybe, or large paperclip wires being the whiskers, and then this long tail. This is really adorable. Very nice.
So what the children see is the... they might be playing. The 3-year-old is having fun playing, but the older children would describe that's this. What you're witnessing is basically the mouse spins down the screw, an Archimedes screw, a 2,000-year-old invention. So that kind of plants the seed of learning.
Yeah, what a great idea. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Alexis, about your project with robot algebra?
It really incorporates a lot of team building. You know, in cooperative learning.
That's a good point, because you've got girls that maybe have to decide what the correct answer is. And that's kind of fun to be able to do that. And team building, we use team building in a lot of what we do here when we do youth media projects. And we talk about media ethics and, you know, is it right or isn't it right to do this? And it's really fun to watch the discussions, I won't call them arguments, the heated discussions that could sometimes take place, which has got to be a lot of fun.
It is. So we're really excited to get this started this fall, and, you know, we're excited with the partnerships, you know, that we formed so far.
Now, Mac Howison is the manager for the Spark program at the Sprout Fund, who has been quietly sitting here listening to all these great projects. And congratulations. You know, I remember when this program started, it was kicked off right here at the Children's Museum with the Grable Foundation and hundreds of people, you know, awaiting how they could get involved. And, you know, with any kind of new thing, there's a little bit of risk as you embark on something. And what a success with all of the projects. And there's still more to come, right?
Yeah, that's right, Larry. Thank you so much. We are really proud of where we sit in the program right now. It started as a 3-year initiative at the Sprout Fund, funded by the Grable Foundation. And we're just about exactly halfway through it at this point. And we've funded 12 projects. Looking forward to, you know, getting the next 12 to 15 under our belt in the next year and a half. And we actually just took in a round of new applications. And so the advisory committee at the Sprout Fund is getting ready to consider new projects, and we should be able to make an announcement in late July to early August of the next round of MicroSpark projects. So what we hope is creating a critical mass around these kind of programs that are important to young children, and I know important to the Grable Foundation as well. So we are excited and definitely proud of these projects. And the reason I'm quiet during these kind of discussions is because the projects really need to speak for themselves, and they do the hard work, and we hope to provide the support for that.
And whether you apply for a grant through the Sprout Fund or not, the Sprout Fund is a great link to hundreds and hundreds of organizations and people working with kids and technology. And you can learn more about the programs that are available. It's sproutfund.org is the website. Additionally, I think it was this week, Forbes ranked Pittsburgh the 7th best place for families. And, you know, those rankings, sometimes you can take them. You know, when they're good, we'll say they're accurate. When they're not good, we'll say, they're wrong. But there really is a movement here in the Pittsburgh area with creativity and children and play. And, you know, as a native, it's really exciting to me to see this happening. And I'm sure you see more on the horizon, too.
Absolutely. There are a lot of great things coming up. And those of us that have lived in Pittsburgh for a while and raised our children here or still have our young families here, we've known that it's a great place to raise a family, and so Forbes is catching on, I guess. But Sprout's got a lot going on, and you definitely can learn more at the website. You can always give us a call, too. We have a small staff and location right on Penn Avenue that's a kind of a walk-in storefront foundation. We're launching a new initiative, too, Larry. I should tell you a little bit about this. While we're in kind of a quiet period for Spark as we make decisions and we look towards the fall for our larger Super Spark Award, we're launching a program called Spring, which is supported by the Pittsburgh Foundation. And Spring is focused on biodiversity initiatives in the region and increasing biodiversity. So it's a broad-based application and a broad-based program that's actually even a little bit bigger than Allegheny County. It includes some parts of Westmoreland as well. So check our website for that, too. Spring is coming up in August and September. We'll have an ideation session and a number of public opportunities for folks to get involved. So if you're interested in biodiversity, green initiatives, environmentalism, ecology, all of that will apply to a new funding program at the Sprout Fund called Spring.
That sounds great. Sprout continues to innovate and to make so many things happen. You know, we asked everybody about their background except you, Mac. Are you from Pittsburgh originally?
Well, I'm not from Pittsburgh, but I think this year or maybe last year, I've now lived here longer than I have not. So I came here in the early 90s to attend school at Carnegie Mellon University. I now live in Swissvale. I own a home very close to Swiss Helm Park. So I have a family with two young children and a wife who works at the Waldorf School of Pittsburgh. So we're very happy to be here. And I've always once I moved to Pittsburgh, I fell in love, and I've planned to stay here as long as I can.
Glad. Any other words? Did anybody forget to say anything that they wanted to say?
Well, and lastly, if you're in the mood for a party this summer, the Sprout Fund, of course, hosts an annual event called Hot House. And Hot House is last year grew to epic proportions, and we hope to barely contain the excitement again this year at a location selected on at the old Don Allen Auto dealership at Baum and Liberty.
Oh my gosh, what a
cool place. Yeah. It's quite an expanse, and hopefully we'll have a lot more outdoor space than we did last year even to accommodate the crowds. But be looking for that event on August 28th. Hold that date, and soon tickets will be available on sale probably in the next couple of weeks. So Hot House is the annual benefit for the Sprout Fund, where we showcase projects we've supported to the community and share some great complimentary food and drink and entertainment.
Sproutfund.org is where you go for more information on Sprout. You can go to the Girl Scouts website to learn more about Alexis Howard's program or to contact her about robot algebra at gswpa.org. And Dave Edwards, is there a best way to contact you? Is there a website or email address?
The best way right now is to go on the website www.davidedwardsart.com. Or you can just call me at 412-888-8888. 487-0621.
And Ian, the best way through Sprout, or is there another place?
Well, I guess it bears mentioning that I'll be leading walks in August in Frick Park, and the Pittsburgh Parks Conservancy will be advertising those so people can find out when they are. They'll be the weekends, the last 3 weekends of August. And if people want to contact me, they're welcome to go to my other website, which is ingramclockworks.com, and use the email there.
Terrific. That's just ingramclockworks.com.
Yeah, ingramclockworks.com.
Excellent. Thank you all for being here. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
I hope you will look for more information about Sprout by going to sproutfund.org.